this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the first headline across the top of the page. Red Hat looks out of area for headquarters size space. And on the left side of this article that runs horizontally across the top of the page, there's a picture of the outside of a very large building. The caption reads, Red Hat operates out of this building on NCSU's Centennial Campus for now. And this article is written by Amanda Jones-Hoyle and Frank Van Leeuwen with a dateline of Raleigh. Red Hat Incorporated, one of the Triangle's high-profile companies, is scouting for sites in other states where officials may also be wooing the open-source software developer to move its headquarters from Raleigh. Sources say Red Hat has been shopping for about 300,000 square feet of office space in both Atlanta and in Austin, Texas, which would be enough space for the company to relocate and double the size of its current space. Atlanta and Austin, much like the Triangle, are known for their well-educated, high-tech workforces and often compete with Triangle real estate and economic development recruiters for corporate site selection projects and the resulting jobs. As a healthy company, Red Hat is always planning for expansion and examining our best options, says Lee Day, Senior Director of Corporate Communications for Red Hat. She did not answer any further questions about possible expansion in Atlanta or Austin, or whether the company is considering a relocation of its headquarters. Dennis Kakas, Associate Vice Chancellor of the Centennial Campus Partnership Office, says that Alliance Center is one option for Red Hat, but not the only option. There are other parcels that can be developed, and they are looking at all their options, and not just on our campus, Kakas says. At our last checkpoint we had with Red Hat executives, they told us they were in process and that it would be a number of months before they made a decision, Kakas says. Obviously, they have been a good partner and we appreciate everything they do. In recent weeks, Red Hat officials have visited with Georgia Institute of Technology officials in Atlanta and have met with administrators at the University of Texas at Austin. Sources say, but the project is still the Triangle's to lose, sources say. Red Hat has called the Triangle home since its founder, entrepreneur Bob Young, moved the company to Durham in 1996. Red Hat since has established strong ties with researchers at North Carolina State University and with others in the community. Even while company executives have been touring sites out of state, local architects have been sketching alternative plans for a new Raleigh building that would allow Red Hat to expand its local operations by another 120,000 to 150,000 square feet of space from the current 188,000. Also, Red Hat's largest lease contract at the 1801 Varsity Drive building doesn't expire until June 2020. Since the day that Red Hat moved into its Centennial Campus headquarters building, the company has been searching for more space as market demand for its services propelled steady growth. I know they've been looking for a while for some alternatives, says David Townsend, a partner with the Trinity Partners real estate firm in Raleigh, who has helped renovate much of Red Hat's office space over the years. Townsend says he has no knowledge of Red Hat's current expansion plans, but says the company seems to always be looking to expand. They are always entertaining options for space, but I've not heard anything concrete, Townsend says. The Jones Lang LaSalle commercial real estate firm is representing Red Hat in its real estate search and lease negotiations. Red Hat had only about 200 employees when it moved into the Lucent Technologies building at NC State University's Centennial Campus in 2002. By 2007, it had filled the building and was expanding into a second office building at Centennial Campus. It expanded again in 2008 and 2009. All told, the company pays about $3.4 million in annual rent for the 188,000 square feet it's leasing, according to federal filings. The very thought of losing one of the Triangle's premier homegrown companies is sure to send waves of anxiety throughout the business community. Red Hat has fended off numerous competitors to become the clear leader in open-source software service and support. It employs more than 2,500 people at more than 50 locations in 28 countries around the world. Red Hat's business has continued to grow in the United States and abroad. In the company's fiscal first quarter, ending May 31, Red Hat reported net income of $24.1 million, up 30% over $18.5 million in the prior year period. Revenue was up by 20% to $209 million. Red Hat was pretty much the first to market, says Gartner analyst Lori Werster. Because of that, they're the leader in the open source market. Gartner recently completed a global survey asking nearly 600 companies about their plans regarding open source software. Werster says 30% of respondents indicated that they are using open source to avoid being locked into a particular vendor. Trip Chowdhury, an analyst with Global Equities Research, says Red Hat owes its performance to the global recession, which has forced companies to look for ways to cut costs and reevaluate all of their vendor relationships. Companies want software that gives them flexibility and doesn't force them to pay for bells and whistles they don't need. Chowdhury, who owns no shares in Red Hat, is unaware of any relocation or expansion plans for the company, but he says expansion makes sense for the company. Acceptance of open source has grown worldwide. He says Red Hat has the scale to provide open source service and support globally. I would not be surprised if they were to expand, Chowdhury says. They could expand in the U.S. or in Europe because the opportunities are plenty. And now we move down the page, still on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal. And our next article, it's in the center of the page, has a black border around it. Inside that border, at the top, there's a picture of a man sitting in his office, it looks like, with a casually dressed with piles and piles of books on the counter behind him. And the caption reads, "Medicine developed by Dr. Michael Hirschfield could bring welcome relief to thousands of patients who suffer from the painful arthritic condition known as gout." And then under that on the left, there's the headline in bold black lettering, and then the article on the right. The headline, "His science not sexy, but appreciated. Duke doctor developed gout drug that just gained FDA green light." And this article is written by James Gallagher with a Dateline of Durham. Severe gout sufferers soon may have a new tool to fight the arthritic disease thanks to the work of a Duke University doctor. For the past 17 years, Dr. Michael Hirschfield has been working to create an enzymatic treatment for severe gout. The quest came to an end on September 14 when the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved Savient Pharmaceuticals' Krystexxa, a drug created by Hirschfield and his colleagues at Duke. And that's Krystexxa spelled K-R-Y-S-T-E-X-X-A. Gout is a form of arthritis in which uric acid pools in joints, often in the toes, and then begins crystallizing. It is a very painful disease. Some patients cannot bear even the weight of a bedsheet on their toes. For most gout patients, the pain can be treated with anti-inflammatory drugs such as Advil or with drugs that have been around for more than 40 years that prevent the body from creating additional uric acid once a diagnosis of gout has been made. But those blocking drugs take years to be effective because they do nothing to reduce the acid already in the body. For a small percentage, those remedies are not sufficient, and uric acid can build up to the point that the joints swell and become immobile and thus lead to the creation of uric acid kidney stones. Krystexxa is designed to treat those individuals. Dr. Badril Chowdhury, director of the Division of Pulmonary Allergy and Rheumatology Products in the FDA's Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, says the new drug will provide a treatment option for about 3% of the 3 million adults who suffer from gout. Adds Dr. Larry Edwards, CEO of the Gout and Uric Acid Education Society and a professor of medicine at the University of Florida, "This will be the most impressive approach we've ever had, reducing acid in the body." Edwards, who was among the doctors conducting Phase 3 clinical trials on the drug for Savient, says this will be the first drug that actively works to reduce uric acid within the body. Uric acid is created in the liver when the protein purine, which is used to build DNA and RNA, is broken down. For most people, the uric acid is excreted through urine and sweat. But in some people, the liver produces more uric acid than the body can excrete, allowing it to build in the bloodstream and ultimately settling in joints. Blood flow slows in joints and the area tends to be cooler, allowing for the uric acid to crystallize into gout. In mild gout, the uric acid builds up for short periods of time but goes away after a couple of days. Those patients can treat the attacks with pain relievers or stave off attacks with drugs such as allopurinol that block the production of uric acid. Dr. Beth Jonas at UNC Hospital says if physicians can diagnose and treat patients early, existing drugs can prevent gout from developing into destructive arthritis. But this new treatment will be critical for patients who do not get treatment early or for whom existing therapies do not work. In about 1% of gout patients, the uric acid still builds, and the disease gets worse over time. To combat that, Hirschfield uses the enzyme uricase to break down uric acid and the uric acid crystals so they can be excreted from the body. Uricase is an enzyme that is found naturally in many animals, including dogs, cats, mice, and pigs, but humans suffer from a genetic mutation that prevents the body from creating it. For the drug, Hirschfield combined pig genes with bacteria to produce uricase. He then purified it and combined it with a polymer, PEG, that stabilizes the enzyme and allows it to stay in the body for days or weeks. Original work on bubble boy disease. Hirschfield said he came up with the idea for the gout treatment while working in the 1980s to treat ADA-SCID, or severe combined immunodeficiency, a rare disorder in which a person has almost no immune system. It is often referred to as bubble boy disease because some patients actually have had to resort to living in a sterilized bubble. The disease is caused by a genetic mutation that prevents the body from creating the enzyme adenosine deaminase, or ADA. Duke was approached by a drug company in the early 1980s and was asked to help the company test and perfect an enzyme treatment that would help children with ADA-SCID who did not respond to bone marrow transplants. That drug, PEG-ADA, used a cow gene to create the enzyme ADA, which was then attached to the PEG polymer. Following that success, Hirschfield turned to that process for treating gout. After developing the drug, Duke and Mountain View licensed it to East Brunswick, New Jersey-based Savient. This is not a drug anybody wanted to develop, says Hirschfield. And we have another article on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal, this one just to the right of that article. The headline, Nationwide to Expand Space, Add 245 Jobs. And this article is written by Amanda Jones-Hoyle with the Dateline of Raleigh. And at the bottom, there's another picture of a large building, and the caption reads, Crabtree Overlook Office Building will house Nationwide. Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company, one of the largest property and casualty insurance carriers in North Carolina, will be hiring for 245 additional jobs, taking employment at its Raleigh Service Center above 1,000. Nationwide has signed a deal to lease 44,000 square feet of space in the Crabtree Overlook Office Building off Lead Mine Road, where most of the expansion will occur. The building is about 1.5 miles from the Nationwide Service Center building on Creedmoor Road the company has occupied since 1975. Some of the hires, which will occur over the next few months, will involve the relocation of Nationwide employees from elsewhere in the region, but most will be new hires, says Elizabeth Stelzer, a spokeswoman for the Columbus, Ohio-based insurance provider. The need to lease the space was prompted by growth in many of the different functions in the service center, she says. The Raleigh Service Center currently employs about 800 people who handle claims, sales, underwriting, processing, servicing, and other support duties. This is another example of our commitment to North Carolina, Stelzer says. Nationwide also is working through site plan approval with the City of Raleigh to expand the parking lot at its current Creedmoor Road building. The plan is to add almost 90 vehicle spaces at the site, says Raleigh planner Mead Bradshaw, who is working with Nationwide and its consultants on the plan. Nationwide expects to be able to move into the Crabtree Overlook building in early November, says Jeff Sheehan, Senior Vice President of Raleigh Operations for Duke Realty Corporation, the owner of the Crabtree Overlook building. This deal was signed quick, Sheehan says. They first started looking for space in June and had it signed in August. That's lightning speed for a deal that size these days. Nationwide will occupy space that was vacated in the past year by Centex Homes after that company merged with Pulte Homes, as well as space vacated by the Ogletree Deacons Law Firm after it relocated to Duke's Realty CapTrust Tower building in January. The insurance carrier was represented by John Daly and Jason High with the C.B. Richard Ellis real estate firm in Raleigh in its lease negotiations. Nationwide has not requested economic development incentives from either state or local government groups. The insurance carrier, which also offers retirement financial products, had $12.5 billion in statutory surplus capital as of June 30, which is more than three times the amount required by Ohio state regulators. It reported a $483 million profit for the first 6 months of 2010, which was up by 45% from $332 million in the same period in 2009. And our last front page article in the Triangle Business Journal runs horizontally along the bottom of the page. The headline, with separate entity, UNC to go bidding for doctor practices. And this has a faraway shot of a large building on the left side of the article. The caption reads, UNC Healthcare's flagship hospital in Chapel Hill. And this article is written by James Gallagher with a dateline of Chapel Hill. UNC Healthcare is joining the race to gobble up physician practices through a newly created subsidiary. The state-owned healthcare system has created the Triangle Physician Network, LLC, a wholly owned subsidiary that will serve as the channel through which UNC acquires private physician practices. So far, TPN, as it is referred to, has not acquired any physicians groups, though Dr. Al Dogweird, TPN's president, says the hospital system is in advanced negotiations with several practices, and he expects to have some signed by the end of the calendar year. TPN also will serve as the corporate umbrella for UNC Healthcare's community care centers, as well as the primary care physicians at Raleigh's Rex Hospital, which is owned by UNC Healthcare. The move by UNC Healthcare is not without precedent. Hospitals across the nation increasingly have been acquiring physician practices in recent years. The deals give the hospitals a pipeline of patients, while the physicians are able to pass off back-office operations to the hospitals. UNC Hospital's CFO, Chris Ellington, says the system can provide the physicians access to UNC's managed care contracts, which means better reimbursement rates for doctors. The trend of hospitals buying physician groups was big in the early 1990s, but it slowed as the decade progressed. It has come back in large part due to healthcare reform. The legislation calls for standards and records management systems that smaller physician practices often have a hard time affording. Being part of a network can make it easier to meet those standards. Additionally, the federal government, which pays for a large amount of the care provided through Medicare and Medicaid, has indicated it would prefer to work with larger systems than a bunch of smaller physicians groups. Locally, about a half dozen physician groups have been acquired by hospitals over the past 2 years. UNC Healthcare and UNC Hospitals, however, have largely been shut out of that process. At UNC Hospitals, all physicians also are members of the faculty at UNC School of Medicine and have academic duties such as teaching and conducting research, as well as clinical duties. Many private practice docs just want to perform medicine. Before the creation of TPN, we really had no way of requiring practices of physicians who wanted to stay in full-time practice, says Duggard. The only way we could do that was for them to work directly for one of our hospitals. Rex Hospital, which is owned by UNC Healthcare, has been able to acquire physician practices because it operates as an independent private health system. While Rex's primary care physicians will move under TPN, the Raleigh Hospital will retain its Wake County specialty practices, including the surgery, heart and vascular, and thoracic practices under its Rex Physicians LLC, says Bob Ricker, Rex's Associate Vice President for Physician Services and the Executive Director of TPN. Outside Wake County, any acquired specialty physician groups will fall under TPN. TPN will purchase or lease the assets of a physician practice, though doctors will not receive any upfront payment. Dalgird says that in the 1990s, many hospitals paid doctors an amount for goodwill when they bought the practice, but in many cases, the hospitals overpaid. In many cases, the physicians will be paid a salary by UNC Healthcare, plus an incentive-based bonus depending on the number of procedures they perform or the number of patients they see. In other cases, the physician will self-manage their practice, paying a management fee to UNC Healthcare and dividing what is left among themselves. And now we turn inside the Triangle Business Journal, and we come to this edition's Biz column. The headline that starts it off, Ride This Monster If You Dare at the NC State Fair. And the there's a picture under that that shows a family playing a game at the fair. The caption reads, Winning a prize is part of the fun at the state fair. Ah, biz can finally feel it. Fall is in the air, and that means it's time to start saving our pennies and dimes for the next go-around of that great slice of Americana, the North Carolina State Fair. Biz snoops have been out and about discovering what's new at this year's run, and we've uncovered quite a scoop. This year's fair will feature one of the biggest, most stomach-churning rides in the world when Fighter makes its debut in Raleigh in October. The 35-foot-tall ride combines the rotating movements of a carousel with the pendulum motion of a swing. Think of it as an airborne merry-go-round. There are only two of these Fighter rides in the world. According to Powers Great American Midways, the ride needs a special permit to be transported across highways on its 91-foot trailer. Biz doesn't know about riding this monster, but it's frightening to just look at. The thing looks like it's going to come alive, break free from its mooring, and terrorize the midway. Check out the video at info.ncagr.com/deepfried/P=3973. The North Carolina Symphony's free concert at the new amphitheater in downtown Raleigh on September 12 drew quite a crowd, including two notable partners at the Parker Poe Law Firm. Raleigh Mayor Charles Meeker tells Biz that he enjoyed the symphony's rendition of Henry Mancini's work the most, while fellow attorney Catherine Arrowwood appreciated how audience members sang along for America the Beautiful. I hope we're going to see the symphony play there more, says Arrowwood, the vice chair of the symphony's board of trustees. Being able to perform in that amphitheater is just a wonderful opportunity for us. And for music lovers as well, Catherine. Was that a fire burning at the new Hunt Library construction project at Centennial Campus? No need to worry. That was just the project's construction contractor, Skanska USA, practicing its safety procedures. Skanska this week has been organizing special events for its 55,000 employees around the world, including at its projects in the Triangle, to improve safety efforts at work sites. At the Hunt Library, the staff demonstrated and practiced how to put out a fire with fire extinguishers. Skanska also tossed a life-size dummy from a window to demonstrate harness safety. It was the sixth year that Skanska's Durham office has participated in the international event. NASCAR driver Burt Myers, who recently appeared on the History Channel's Madhouse series based on race car drivers at the historic Bowman Gray Stadium in Winston-Salem, will greet fans at the second annual Family Day event at the Raleigh Executive Jetport in Sanford on October 9. More than 3,500 people attended the event last year, and planners say they are expecting an even larger crowd this year. It features a full day of aviation-related activities, including free plane rides for children ages 8 to 17, courtesy of the Experimental Aircraft Association's Young Eagles program. Myers will be there with the Capital Bank Ford car he drives on NASCAR's Willen Southern Modified Tour. Capital Bank of Raleigh is a major sponsor of the Family Day event. Researchers from NC State University could help medical examiners in Chile identify the remains of those killed during recent earthquakes, as well as of those who disappeared during the Pinochet administration. Ann Ross, a professor of sociology and anthropology, studied the remains from a 20th century Chilean cemetery to characterize Chilean skeletal features. Using that information, Ross and her colleagues created a set of criteria for determining height from leg bones and sex based on the articulation of the upper arm bone and femur. This will also help in contemporary body identification efforts in Chile. For example, in the event of a mass fatality, such as the February earthquake in Chile, this will help authorities identify recovered remains, says Ross. Ross's study will be published in an upcoming issue of the journal Forensic Science International. There are history buffs who like to read about the past, but securities industry veteran Garland S. Tucker III is something else again. Tucker is a Washington and Lee University and Harvard Business School grad who founded Raleigh-based Triangle Capital Corporation, a publicly traded specialty lender to mid-sized companies. As if running a company with a market cap of $200 million wasn't enough, Tucker has taken his academic interest to new heights by writing and getting published a 336-page book on the presidential election of 1924. The High Tide of American Conservatism, David Coolidge and the 1924 Election, published by Emerald Book Company, hit the stores in hardcover on September 1. Various commentators who have read the book offer kudos. Well-told tale is how Steve Forbes reacted to the work. Tucker captures it brilliantly, chimed in Fox News' Fred Barnes, who contributed a foreword for the book. The North Carolina Sustainable Energy Association has stumbled upon a new way to get you to conserve energy, and all it takes is a couple of mouse clicks to get to their site. The association recently changed its website to incorporate a darker background. The site previously had been mostly white. Computer monitors require more power to display a light screen than a dark screen, the group says on the site. NCSEA has chosen to use a darker background on our website to help your computer conserve energy. Is that true? Does your office have crowded spaces and cluttered closets? Raleigh company Reclaim, a professional organizer, is holding a contest to find the most disorganized business in the Triangle. Reclaim will give the winner the chance at a free office makeover. If you think your office space is most deserving of a makeover, submit a video of no more than 2 minutes or a brief essay of no more than 100 words explaining why. Entries must be sent to ihamm@aaeasy.com by September 22nd. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina has been named one of Working Mother Magazine's 100 Best Companies. The magazine selects companies that it judges to offer the best practices to support working mothers, such as childcare, flexible work schedules, and company culture. BCBSNC and Charlotte-based Bank of America were the only two companies in North Carolina to make the list. If you're like Biz, you love to blow things up, safely, and with the proper adult supervision, of course. If so, check out Adam Savage and Jamie Heineman in Chapel Hill on September 19. The dynamic stuntmen duo, best known for their exploits on the Discovery Channel show Mythbusters, will appear as part of a program at the Smith Center at 2 p.m. The event is part of the North Carolina Science Festival, which is coordinated by the Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center. Keith Kapp, interior decorator? That's what Biz wondered after hearing that Virginia law firm Williams Mullins Raleigh office won first place for corporate interiors as part of the Interior Design Excellence Awards that was held in Richmond recently. Biz is sure that Kapp, a Raleigh attorney who sits on the firm's board of directors, would be happy to give a tour of the award-winning office anytime. Oh, goody, a celebrity spotting, and it's not a hockey player. Ever heard the name Josh Holloway? Maybe not, but if you've watched the TV show Lost, you'll know him as Sawyer, the sassiest of the 71 survivors who entertained TV watchers for six seasons. Biz is told that Holloway was spotted at Shucker's Oyster Bar and Grill in Wake Forest during a Friday night dinner seating. He was there with cousin Laura Hall and her hubby Ed Hall. Holloway has family in the area, according to a report in the Wake Weekly, including his mother, who is a Lewisburg resident. A devastating fire at one of North Carolina's most historic local government buildings can't wipe out the passion that folks in Chatham County have for their old courthouse. Not only will it be rebuilt, it will be put to a better use than before, declare county leaders, who appointed a task force to come up with uses for the building once the makeover is complete. The task force recommends a courtroom be retained on the second floor and that new functions be added to the first floor to attract more visitors. The kids at E.K. Poe Elementary School in Durham are enjoying a new library that they helped design with their ideas. The library received funding by retailer Target and the Heart of America Foundation as part of the Target School Library Makeovers Program, a national campaign to overhaul libraries to promote literacy. New, thanks to the funding, at Poe are 2,000 books, computers, furniture, shelves, flooring, paint, and a green design. Since 1946, Target has donated 5% of its income to charity, a pledge that now amounts to $3 million a week. Now you can feel real good when you shop at Target. When is a cooking school a restaurant? Over in Orange County, it's when the health department says so. At least that's the case for now. After inspecting the cooking schools at a Southern Season and at C.S. Cibone, the health department ruled that they would have to be permitted as restaurants. Not so fast, says C.S. Cibone owners Rich Snover and Dorette Snover. They claim they have a 2007 memo exempting their school from restaurant regulations, and they've sued the health department to stop its action, reports the Chapel Hill News. As they say, see ya in court. Trying to improve measures of accountability, the 11-campus Texas A&M system is looking into using a new system to evaluate professors' worth, reports the Bryan College Station Eagle. The system will run a calculation based on a professor's salaries, how much research money they bring in, and how much money they generate from teaching to give a sort of profit or loss rating for each professor. Biz isn't proposing the UNC system adopt this idea, but Contributing to Biz were staffers Amanda Jones-Hoyle, Chris Basden, Frank Van Leeuwen, James Gallagher, and Lee Weisbecker. And now we return to our full-length articles in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one we come to has the headline, New Developer Angles for a Loft Near RDU. And first, at the right side of this article that runs horizontally across the top of page 3, there's a picture of part of a building with a sign on it that says A Loft. And the caption reads, A Loft Hotel in Chapel Hill Offers Style Technology. This article is written by Chris Basden with the Dateline of Raleigh. Another developer is taking a shot at building an aloft hotel near Raleigh-Durham International Airport, a project that Raleigh's Winston Hotels Incorporated previously pursued and wants to use a Stimulus Act provision to help fund it. Narcy Development 2 LLC, which is based in Huntersville, north of Charlotte, plans to build a 144-unit hotel at 10020 Solona Street in Raleigh, according to an application submitted to the Wake County Industrial Facilities and Pollution Control Financing Authority. The application was necessary because NARCI seeks to use recovery zone facility bonds to raise $15 million for the proposed project. Recovery zone bonds are a form of tax-exempt bonds for commercial facilities that were created by the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, the Stimulus Act. The hotel would be located to the west of RDU, not far from the intersection of Aviation Parkway and I-540. NARCI wants to start construction at the beginning of 2011, with the goal of opening the hotel in 2012, according to the application, which estimates that the project would create 37 jobs. Devin Patel, who is listed on the application as Narcy's representative, said in a brief phone interview that the company has lined up an additional amount of equity funding for the project. He declined to reveal that amount or the total cost of the project. The City of Raleigh approved the site plan for the 76,000-plus square foot hotel on 5 acres in March 2009, according to the city's planning department. "We really just need the money," says Patel, who declined to discuss further specifics of the project. The Wake Financing Authority would act as a conduit issuer of the facility bonds, says Martin Brinkley, a Smith Anderson attorney who represents the authority. The authority passed a resolution on September 13th that was the first step in allowing Narcy to fund the project with the bonds. But the company also has to obtain approval from the Wake County Commissioners and the Local Government Commission, Brinkley says. Patel and his underwriter also have to find qualified institutional buyers for the bonds, and the clock is ticking. The bonds have to be closed by the end of the year because that's when the legislation that authorized them expires, according to Brent Jeffcoat, a Charlotte-based McGuire Woods LLP attorney who represents Narcy. This isn't the first time a company has sought to build in a loft near the airport. Winston Hotels tried to do it several years ago on a separate site adjacent to the Hilton Garden Inn. That 151-room hotel was projected to cost $18.9 million. But that project faltered after the Raleigh-based public company's acquisition by Inland American Real Estate Trust in 2007. "That was lost, and now somebody else is coming in to do it," says Bob Winston, the former chief executive officer at Winston Hotels, who now helms Winston Hospitality Incorporated. "We think it's a great hotel for that area." Starwood Hotels launched the Aloft brand in 2005, and Aloft opened in Chapel Hill earlier this year, becoming the first one in the Triangle. Aloft hotels are characterized by their distinct urban influence design, high style, and easily accessible technology. Prolific builder in Chapter 11. That's the headline on our next article, this one written by Amanda Jones Hoyle with the Dateline of Raleigh. A Maryland home building company that did more than half of its construction work in the Triangle over the past several years has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. PCS Homes of Millersville, Maryland, succumbed to pressure from its creditors and the slow housing market and filed for bankruptcy protection in a Maryland court on September 3rd. Involved are seven of its affiliated businesses, including Breezewood Homes, LLC, and NC Homes, LLC, both of Raleigh. PCS Homes has built hundreds of affordable townhouse and condominium units across Wake County since the company, which is led by founder and CEO James W. Thomason Sr., entered the Triangle market in 1999. Thomason and his family have been building homes in Maryland and Delaware for more than 35 years, according to the company's website. PCS has homes for sale in six communities in Raleigh, Apex, and Cary, including Kingston at Wakefield, Haddon Hall, Anderson Point, and Weatherfield. Most of its homes are priced between $117,000 and $212,000. Mike Punte, division president for PCS Homes in Raleigh, did not return calls for comment. The company's bankruptcy lawyer, Irving Walker of Baltimore, said through a spokesman that he would not comment on the case. Among the company's more than 30 largest unsecured creditors, 17 are based in North Carolina, according to Maryland court documents. Affiliates of PCS owe the city of Raleigh $77,644 in taxes, and Seeley's Quality Plumbing Incorporated of Benson, almost $165,700. More than 350 creditors have received notice of PCS's bankruptcy filing. Stephen Scoggins, owner of Custom Home Exteriors in Raleigh, says he is owed more than $90,000 for siding work he completed on five PCS townhomes in Raleigh last year. Scoggins says PCS isn't the only regional building company throwing in the towel. Scoggins is still owed more than $115,000 by another active Triangle building group, Orleans Home Builders Incorporated. Pennsylvania-based Orleans filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in March. "PCS is still trying to get a lot of us paid, but I heard the banks haven't helped them much," says Scoggins, who says he is also an investor in several of PCS's communities in the Triangle. The Raleigh market has always sold well for them, even in the past 2 years, but Maryland has not. I'm pretty sure Raleigh was funding Maryland. It's been a tough year psychologically for many home builders in the Triangle, says Tim Minton, executive director of the Home Builders Association of Raleigh-Wake County. The number of building permits issued in August in Wake County was up by 7.5% compared to the year prior, he says, but local builder groups are still struggling to work out deals and loan extensions with their lenders. In the past year, the owners of Perry Builders and Tall House Building Company in Raleigh have filed for bankruptcy protection, and industry experts predict more home building companies could also fall victim. We clearly are going through a process that depends on the number of buyers out there that will determine how many builders we will have, Minton says. The building industry doesn't have cash on the sidelines to pay off these loans. Houses need to sell. Now, our next article is written by Lee Weisbecker with the Dateline of Chapel Hill. The headline, Bank Nears Infusion It Needs, Sale Expected to Bestow $8 Million on Harrington Bank. And above the article, there's a picture of a man in coat and tie standing at a podium with flowers on the podium, some yellow balloons behind him. And the caption reads, Harrington Bank CEO Larry Loser says it's too early to discuss funding. The announced sale of a troubled California community bank is expected to bring fresh cash in the $8 million range to Chapel Hill's Harrington Bank. When completed, the cash infusion should hasten the end of tighter regulatory supervision of the $304 million total asset Harrington, which signed a 2009 consent agreement with federal regulators to raise more capital. Harrington CEO Larry Loser says no formal closing date has been set for the California transaction that would benefit his four-branch, 59-employee institution some 3,000 miles to the east. We hope to have one, a closing date, very soon, Loser says. We are waiting on a final regulatory approval, and hopefully it'll close by the end of this month. The money to recapitalize Harrington is coming from the sale of Redondo Beach, California-based Bay Cities National Bank, to West Coast investment banker Stephen H. Gordon. In a press release September 7, Gordon announced his takeover plans for Bay Cities. In addition to the buyout of existing shareholders, Gordon says he'll pump cash into the bank, change its name, and recharter it from a national to a state lending institution. California regulators already have given conditional approval for the charter change, says Elena Golden of the California Department of Financial Institutions. Bay Cities, Harrington, and a third bank, Corydon, Indiana-based Community First, made up a three-bank holding company called Community First Financial Group that was controlled by Chapel Hill businessman and educator Douglas T. Breeden, former dean of Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. In the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, Harrington and Bay Cities took write-downs on the mortgage-backed securities that made up portions of the capital base against which they made loans. Both banks subsequently signed consent agreements with federal banking regulators, Harrington with the Office of Thrift Supervision, to beef up capital. The holding company, Community First Financial Group, also implemented a restructuring plan, selling its Indiana Community Bank to pay off debt and putting Bay Cities on the block. Breeden, in an April 2009 letter to Community First Financial Group shareholders that was obtained by Triangle Business Journal, wrote that he was anticipating $12.9 million from the Bay Cities all-cash sales, with $4.5 million earmarked to pay off outstanding Bay Cities debt. The remaining proceeds, he added, would go, quote, to increase Harrington's capital levels so that they continue to run a sound, going business, unquote. As the restructuring plan has played out, Harrington has added to its deposits, maintained its staff and branch operations, and posted profits. Net income stood at $664,000 for all of 2009, according to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Net income year-to-date as of June 30, 2010, stood at $616,000, according to the FDIC. Representatives of the OTS, which signed its consent agreement with Harrington in July 2009, declined to discuss the status of the agreement or how long it might remain in effect. "We don't discuss regulatory agreements," said agency spokesman William Rubery, who added that the office is aware of the California developments and that additional capital would be streaming into Harrington. Now, our next article runs horizontally across the bottom of page 3 in the Triangle Business Journal, and it has a headline, "Shah's Prime Hedge Fund Shows Robust Investor Gains." And first, on the left side of this article, there's a picture of a man wearing a tie, sitting in front of sitting at his office desk with two computer screens in front of him. The caption reads, "Himanshu Shah has steadily grown his Raleigh firm." And this article is written by Lee Weisbecker with a dateline of Raleigh. The amount of cash invested in the leading hedge fund of Raleigh-based Shah Capital rose by $21 million, 18%, over the past year, bucking the generally lackluster investing environment. Dollars in the Shah Opportunity Fund, which invests in U.S. and global stocks, rose from $103 million in September 2009 to nearly $122 million now, according to the hedge firm's latest filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The fund's returns on dollars invested year-to-date through July stood at 6% compared to negative 2% for the S&P 500. As for the industry as a whole, 2010 has been bumpy for hedge funds. The New York-based Hennessy Index, which tracks the returns of 1,000 funds, was up by 1.3% year-to-date through August, says Hennessy's Sam Norvell. In four of those 8 months, the index was in negative territory. Of the months where the index needle was pointing positive, the month of March had the best showing at plus 2.66%. Shah Capital's Opportunity Fund was started in 2006 by financial advisor Himanshu Shah, who heads up Shah Capital. Invested dollars in the firm's other investment vehicle, an offshore fund, remained stable at $41.5 million over the past year, according to SEC filings. Looking down the road, says firm spokesman Richard Callahan, Shah Capital is attempting to tamp down investor fears over the possibility of a double-dip recession. "We just don't see it," he says. The firm also is working to counter talk about investing opportunities drying up in China and the rest of Asia. Shah Capital recently invested $11 million of a total $36 million in Beijing-based UT Starcom, a networking and telecommunications solutions provider with offices throughout China, India, and the Pacific Rim. "We have a lot of optimism about where things are going over in China and Asia, and we are putting our money where our mouth is," Callahan says. Shah Capital wasn't the only Raleigh-based hedge operation to see a run-up over the past 12 months. Belltower Advisors, which focuses on resources-related stocks, metals, mining, utilities, and basic materials, saw invested dollars rise by 10% from $50.7 to nearly $56 million. In its Anglian Equity Feeder Fund over the past dozen months, according to the company's latest SEC filings. The firm has been pushing to beef up its other investment vehicles as well. Also on the hedge fund scene, Raleigh-based Hatteras Funds continues to track new investors for its family of alternative investment offerings, and new hedge funds, including the Doheny Diamond Fund, which began offering shares to investors in July, continue to spring up. On a macro level, however, total cash committed to hedge funds is $20 billion less than in 2007, according to Charles Leedy of Chapel Hill Investment Advisors. That keeps today's numbers in perspective. Curtis Media relocating towers to Triangle. This article is written by Chris Baisden with a dateline of Raleigh. Local broadcaster Curtis Media Group is moving the towers for two of the stations it owns to make them bigger players in the Triangle market, while also mulling a shift of flagship station WPTF from the AM to the FM spectrum. The company is spending about $2 million to relocate the tower of WKXU-FM from Lewisburg to Hillsboro and WWMY from Goldsboro to Smithfield. WKXU broadcasts at 102.5, while WWMY is 102.3. While those moves are a foregone conclusion, Curtis Media executives also have been kicking around the merits of an even more intriguing, though less likely, change, finding a way to broadcast longtime AM station WPTF 680 on an FM signal. "That's one of the possibilities we're looking at for sure," says President and COO Phil Zachary. WWMY's move helped precipitate the move of WKXU, says Curtis Media owner, Chairman and CEO Don Curtis. "Due to engineering reasons related to their proximity on the dial, the stations need to be a certain distance apart. The moves also give the stations a chance to reach bigger audiences. Smithfield is much closer to the Triangle's population centers than Goldsboro, and Hillsboro is a strategic location to beam signals to Durham and Chapel Hill. You always try to situate your stations where the largest audience is," says Curtis. The Federal Communications Commission has approved the moves, and the tower sites are under construction. Each site will cost the company about $1 million. While stations aren't moved around willy-nilly, Gary Weiss says this type of relocation isn't uncommon. Weiss, the top executive for Radio 1's local stations, says his company moved the transmitter for hip-hop station 97.5 WQOK-FM to Durham from near Oxford in Granville County about a year ago. WKXU, which Curtis says hasn't made money since he bought the station more than 5 years ago, is a country station. WWMY has been simulcasting oldies music that's also broadcast on WKIX 102.9 FM. The formats probably will be changed, but no decisions have been made. "We're still in the final throes of market research," says Zachary. One possibility that could pop up, depending on what the research shows, would be to simulcast News Talk Station 680 WPTF AM signal on one of those FM stations. The venerable AM station has been working to reinvent itself since losing the popular syndicated shows of both Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity to Clear Channel Communications 106.1 WRDU FM at the beginning of 2010. Radio insiders say that people under the age of 40 don't listen to AM radio very often, preferring to stick to the clearer FM channels. In the past few years, Weiss says stations in Atlanta and Charlotte have been simulcasting AM talk stations over FM signals. Local Clear Channel boss Dick Harlow has been pleased with the ratings produced by WRDU's conservative talk lineup. "We're very big fans of talk on the FM dial," Harlow says. "The talk format is alive and well, and maybe even more alive and well, on FM." Such a move for WPTF is hardly a foregone conclusion, however. Zachary says it isn't a top option because WPTF's audience already can listen without switching to AM thanks to the internet. And while he says everything is on the table, Curtis also is cool to the idea, in part because the signal from his WZTK-FM talk radio station in Burlington already reaches the Triangle. Fed dollars help coast weather downturn. This next article is written by Lee Weisbecker with a Dateline of Wilmington. During a time when demand for business products and services was down across the board, the federal government stepped in to take up at least part of the slack. Various agencies of the federal government pumped $76 million into the new Hanover County economy during 2009 and the first quarter of 2010, according to federal procurement agencies. Some 41% of the cash, or $30.8 million, went to small businesses, which supplied an array of goods and services. The numbers were complied by the Federal Procurement Data System, which tracks the spending habits of all government agencies and publishes the data online. The new Hanover County figures include both routine federal contracting and dollars pumped into the economy by various national recovery programs. In all, federal agencies wrote 1,424 contracts or contract modifications during the five-quarter period. They range from as little as $95 to a high of $2.9 million. Some 623 of those contracting actions were in the small business category, according to the procurement data. Among the larger contracts were those written for dredging projects. Although many of those jobs went to non-Wilmington firms, companies such as Charleston, South Carolina-based Southern Dredging, for instance, the out-of-towners spent money in the local economy while performing the work, which can last from 2 to 3 months or longer to complete. They also generally add on to their workforce by hiring from the local labor market. Much of the other contract cash went directly into the pockets of Wilmington area concerns. These were competitively bid contracts. We went after them and were fortunate enough to get them, says Norman Brailsford of Wilmington-based Abinto Corporation. Abinto owns and operates the Burnt Mill Business Park on Wilmington's Randall Parkway. The $800,000 contract was to lease office space for two federal agencies, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and the Internal Revenue Service. These are long-term contracts that involved considerable upfit, says Brailsford. Hard hit by the housing downturn, Wilmington's jobless rate stood at 9.6% in June, while the rate in New Hanover as a whole was slightly lower at 9.2%. In nearby Brunswick County, the June rate remained in double digits at 10.2%, according to the Employment Security Commission of North Carolina. UNC Wilmington economics professor Woody Hall says every bit of the federal infusion over the past 5 quarters has been a help. You bet it has, says Hall, who says he sees signs of improvement in the coastal economy. He says the Wilmington housing market, while not growing, appears to have stopped shrinking. Retail sales, while still heading south, aren't doing so as fast as they were a year ago. Finally, unemployment, in the city itself anyway, has sunk below double digits and doesn't appear heading back into that territory. At the end of 2009, unemployment in Wilmington was at a 25-year high, says Hall, who pins the improvement since then on the city's economic diversity. In coastal communities that are dependent in large part on a single economic sector, as neighboring Brunswick County is on tourism, for instance, joblessness still exceeds 10%. And for our few remaining minutes, we'll read TriangleBusinessJournal.com. Here's some of the news you may have missed on TBJ's website. Qualcomm makes virtual deal with Red Hat. Wireless technology giant Qualcomm has selected Red Hat's enterprise virtualization technology, deepening the relationship between the two companies. San Diego-based Qualcomm has been using the Red Hat Enterprise Linux operating system since 2003, and in recent years has worked with beta versions of Red Hat's virtualization technology. Virtualization technology allows IT managers to set up multiple servers on a central machine, cutting down on hardware costs. Triangle Company raises $20 million. Triton Medical has raised $20 million in a fourth round of equity financing, the Durham Medical Device Company says. J. Greg Davis, president and CEO of Triton, said in a statement that the new financing will enable the company to conduct U.S. trials of the company's stent system, which already is for sale in Europe. Triton, which has 25 employees, has now raised a total of $37 million. Rugged Warehouse opening 2 new Triangle stores. Discount apparel retailer Rugged Warehouse is unveiling a new store prototype with 2 new Triangle stores, one at Pleasant Valley Promenade Shopping Center on Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh, and the other at Crossroads Plaza Shopping Center in Cary. Both stores will open at 9 a.m. September 23rd. Each will feature the retailer's new 14,000-square-foot design with departments for women, children, men, shoes, and home accessories. Triangle schools post mixed SAT results. Students in about half of the Triangle school districts perform better on the SAT than the rest of the state and nation, according to 2010 test results released by the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction. To find scores for every public school and school system in North Carolina, check out TBJ's interactive database. Just go to www.TriangleBusinessJournal.com and click on the Data Center box on the left-hand side. Fried chicken chain coming to Triangle. The franchise restaurant operator that introduced the Raleigh-Durham area to the Freshberry Frozen Yogurt cafe chain is making plans to bring the revived fried chicken chain Rex's Chicken to the Triangle in 2011. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.